Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
My entire team is basically dealing with secondary trauma all day long because everybody that we deal with is hungry.
Advocates say funds passed for the SNAP benefit backlog may not be addressing the right problem. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, bills to increase the base student allocation are making their way through the legislature.
We're still significantly spending more money on the PFD than we are on spending on educating our youth. And I think that should say something to most people.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Governor Mike Dunleavy signed a bill today that will put millions into a fast-track solution to fix the state's months-long food stamp backlog. But as KTOO's Claire Strempel reports, advocates and insiders say the state's fixes aren't enough.
State eligibility workers, the people who process benefits like food stamps, say the backlog that's left thousands of Alaskans without enough to eat could have been avoided. To set things right, they say the state needs to figure out how to hire and retain fully trained staff. State leadership has blamed the backup on its aging computer system, a deluge of recertifications after pandemic benefits ended, and a cyber attack.
You know, that's just not true.
Fred Rapp has been an eligibility worker for 15 years. He works for the Fairbanks office.
With COVID and the computer hack that occurred, the only thing that really did was just finally expose what was actually happening at the division. It made it so that it was not able to really be hidden anymore from the public.
He said he's been asking elected officials to address the high rates of attrition in the state's Division of Public Assistance ever since Governor Sean Parnell was in office. That's more than a decade ago. He said people started quitting in 2010 due to a combination of staff cuts and drastic changes to process. And he says the current benefits offered to state employees don't incentivize them to stay. So the state has lost a lot of smart people.
You got to keep in the seats. If you don't do that, then everything else that you're trying to do is not going to work.
He says he hears about the effects of his department's dysfunction every day, from elders with empty freezers to new moms who can't get care because the division took too long to process something as simple as an address change. Between Dunleavy's fast-track bill and money in the capital budget, the state plans to spend $60 million to fix the backlog. Most of that, 90% of it, is for computer systems. And Rapp is worried that that's going to a program called ARES.
Because everybody that uses ARES knows that it's a junker.
The name stands for Alaska's Resource for Integrated Eligibility Services. The state rolled it out in 2014, and it was supposed to be for all public assistance. But they only put Medicaid on it.
When they built this thing, the best way I can describe it to you is that they were going for building something like a Ferrari, but when they actually opened the hood and put the engine in it, it ended up being something like a lawnmower engine.
The state says problems with ARES are easy to fix and don't affect the backlog. Plus, it's going to change. Rapp says frequent hiccups with ARES lead to delays in people getting approved for Medicaid. Each time the program fails, he has to set that case aside, file a trouble ticket, and wait for someone in IT to get things back on track. In 9 years, Rapp says he's seen documentation of at least 70,000 such trouble tickets.
Absolutely. He's not wrong at all.
Megan James manages SNAP Outreach for Food Banks of Alaska, and she agrees that the state needs to invest in retaining fully trained employees. She says she's found that new, hastily trained staff make a lot of mistakes.
Employees that are staffing their call center, they're not even trained with the appropriate information. So we get calls from clients saying, well, DPA told me this. And so we're consistently having to you know, correct the misinformation that comes out from these frontline workers that are just being thrown into the fire.
Only $3 million of the state's solution is for staffing. James says she'd like to see the state fund some solutions they haven't tried yet, like a federal tool that lets families who qualify for certain other benefits automatically qualify for food stamps. It saves eligibility workers time, which translates to state savings, and it's also proven to help low-income working families. And Alaska is one of only a handful of states that doesn't use it. Alaska is also one of only two states that doesn't have an online application for SNAP. James says trying to help people navigate this takes a toll on workers, too.
My entire team is basically dealing with secondary trauma all day long because everybody that we deal with is hungry.
Jesus Mendoza Jr. runs the regional United States Department of Agriculture office. He oversees the region's food stamp programs. And he said that Alaska's backlog is the worst in the West.
It is serious, and it is very serious because we have a substantial number. There is a substantial number of Alaska citizens that are not getting benefits.
He sent a letter back in February to Alaska's Department of Health Commissioner, Heidi Hedberg, asking her to come up with a plan to fix the backlog. Alaska is not the only state with a backlog, but it is the only state to receive a letter like this. He acknowledges that the computer fixes the state is proposing will take time.
Replacing an eligibility system is not going to be easy, and it's going to take probably more than a year.
He was quick to point out the state's progress, like new contract hires and the nearly $2 million that Governor Dunleavy put towards food banks. While Alaskans wait on new hires and the computer fixes, they've been needing food banks more than ever. And those have been getting cleaned out.
Very much a Band-Aid.
Ron Meehan manages policy and advocacy for the Food Banks of Alaska, and he's talking about the money intended to hold people over during the backlog.
It's a very temporary solution, and it's not meant to fill the full gap, but it puts us in a much better position than we were in before we had it.
He says SNAP provides at least 10 times the amount of food as the food bank network does in Alaska. So he says everybody knows it isn't going to make up for the state's meltdown. And he says the food banks haven't felt relief yet. Many are even seeing an increased demand, especially among working families.
The people we support are frustrated, they're confused, and they're hungry. And over the last several weeks, we've heard from people that have been watering down soup to feed their kids, eating dog food, or simply going days without eating. And it really is heartbreaking.
The state says it's almost worked through the backlog and plans to have it cleared in a couple months. Right about when it will be digging into more than 250,000 Medicaid renewals for Alaskans who were guaranteed coverage during the pandemic public health emergency that's coming to an end. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
The trio who represent Alaska in Congress had very different reactions to the news that former President Donald Trump has been indicted on criminal charges. Here to tell us about it is Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Lori.
So, Liz, what was the response to the Trump indictment?
Well, Senator Dan Sullivan really stood out from the other two. He issued a full-throated castigation of the decision by the Manhattan DA to charge Trump with crimes. Let me read you some of what he wrote. Any criminal indictment of a former president should involve a serious crime with credible, airtight evidence from numerous press reports. This sealed indictment fails this test. And Sullivan went on to say, now a local partisan prosecutor, well known for being soft on violent crime, has moved our country into banana republic territory. A sad day for our nation. The American people will see through this abuse of the rule of law.
Senator Sullivan is citing reporting on the indictments. Okay, but we don't even know yet what exactly the charges against Trump are, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We expect the charges will be unsealed Tuesday when Trump goes to court. We only know that the charges somehow relate to Stormy Daniels, the adult film actress who says she slept with Trump and was paid $130,000 to keep quiet. Paying hush money is not illegal, so we only know the case is somehow related to that incident. Maybe it has to do with how Trump accounted for the money in his business, but that's speculation.
Is Senator Sullivan's statement in line with what other Republicans in Congress are saying?
Well, a lot of House Republicans are rushing to say much the same, calling the prosecutor politically motivated. But in the Senate, several of the top Republicans are holding back for more information. And, you know, what really strikes me about Sullivan's statement is that it shows how thoroughly he has changed when it comes to Trump. Back in 2016, I'm sure you recall, Sullivan called for Trump to quit the presidential race when the Access Hollywood tape came out. That's the one that showed Trump speaking crudely about grabbing women. Back then, Sullivan was not willing to give Trump the benefit of the doubt. He called it reprehensible and said it showed Trump was unfit to be a national leader. So fast forward to 2023, and here Sullivan is vehemently echoing Trump's complaint that these charges, whatever they are unfair.
Well, Liz, how is Alaska's senior senator, Lisa Murkowski, reacting to this news?
She's much more wait and see. She said no one is above the law and everyone deserves a fair legal process. This part really stood out. Murkowski said, quote, "Instead of rushing to individual judgment, we must also evaluate the evidence as it becomes available and use it to inform our opinions and statements about what is actually happening," unquote.
All right. And from Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola, what have you heard there?
She is holding the whole thing at arm's length. She says she's aware of the indictment and trusts the legal system to resolve the case. And she said, quote, "As a member of the legislative branch, I will continue to focus on advocating for Alaskans in Congress," end quote.
So she's not really jumping in here at all.
No, she is not.
All right, Liz, thank you for that update. That's Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin talking to us from Washington, D.C. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Skagway is expecting record numbers of cruise ship tourists this summer.
When you talk about cruising in the Caribbean, the ship is the destination. In Alaska, Alaska is the destination for all the reasons that we live there. The beautiful mountains, the wildlife.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
The contractor that was halted partway into the construction of a homeless shelter and navigation center for the municipality of Anchorage is suing to get paid. Roger Hickel Contracting filed the lawsuit Tuesday, which was news to the Anchorage Assembly when the mayor's chief of staff, Adam Trombley, brought it up at a meeting today.
Roger Hickel filed suit against the municipality on Tuesday. It was served through the clerk's office, so I'm not sure if you guys were aware of that or not. I just didn't want you to schedule a work session on a settlement when they've decided to sue the municipality.
Thanks. We had not been notified of that.
That second voice was Assembly Chair Suzanne LaFrance. She says in a text message that they will work out next steps after talking with the Assembly's attorneys. In its lawsuit, Hickel says it wants to be paid for the nearly $2.5 million worth of work it did last year, plus damages to be determined. Both Mayor Dave Bronson and the Assembly had wanted to head off this lawsuit with a settlement, but Bronson wanted to pay Hickel unilaterally. The Assembly balked because it controls the city's purse strings, and administration officials have not been able to answer Assembly members' questions about the botched contract. Last week, the Anchorage Assembly blocked payment to Hickel, pending a meeting with the administration to vet the settlement. They've had more than a month to arrange that, but still have not set a meeting. Just 6 days before Hickel filed its lawsuit, acting municipal attorney Ann Helzer told the Assembly if the contractor did sue, the city would be in a bad legal position.
The entire legal department came together and said, this is a valid bill. If we are sued, we will lose.
Before the Assembly stopped construction on the shelter, Hickel said it had cleared the site near the intersection of Tudor and Elmore Roads, created connections for underground utilities, and partially built a foundation. Hickel described the city's conduct as unreasonable, unfair, willful, and in bad faith. Hickel's lawsuit stems from dysfunction in the mayor's administration and its relationship with the assembly. It started last year when the administration authorized Hickel to begin construction without assembly authorization. That came to light last fall, and the Anchorage Assembly suspended the project. Anchorage Animal Shelter has temporarily stopped accepting dogs after several animals tested positive for the highly contagious parvovirus. The Anchorage Animal Care and Control Center says veterinarians are individually examining dogs for the virus and moving them to sanitized areas of the shelter. A shelter spokesperson said so far, three dogs have tested positive for the virus and had to be euthanized because the shelter does not have a designated quarantine area or staff to do 24-hour monitoring. The spokesperson said it will be at least 2 weeks before the shelter takes in dogs again. Meanwhile, the shelter is encouraging people who find stray dogs or who need to rehome their own dogs to use social media or other websites. By today, shelter medical staff had cleared six dogs for adoption and said there had been no positive tests since Wednesday. Parvo infects dogs' digestive tracts, causing bloody diarrhea, which spreads the virus to other animals. Puppies from 6 weeks to 6 months old are particularly susceptible to the virus. It can be prevented with vaccines, and most infections are survivable with prompt veterinary care. A parvo outbreak in September briefly closed the Mat-Su Burrows Animal Shelter, and earlier this month, the disease was also found in seven Juno dogs. Bills that would increase per-student funding for Alaska's public schools continue to move through the legislature. Ketchikan Representative Dan Ortez asked the legislators to support an increase to the base student allocation at a House Finance Committee meeting on Thursday.
We're still significantly spending more money on the PFD than we are on spending on educating our youth, and I think that should say something to most people.
The base student allocation, or BSA, hasn't increased since 2017. Last year, Governor Mike Dunleavy approved a $30 per student increase as part of the Alaska Reads Act, but many school administrators and teachers say that's not enough to keep up with inflation. Legislators are now considering a bigger boost. Ortez originally suggested a $1,250 increase to catch up with inflation. The version of the bill that passed the House Education Committee last week includes an increase of $680 this year and another $120 next year. Some conservatives have argued that state funding for public education shouldn't increase until test scores do. Anchorage Republican Representative Julie Coulombe says she wanted her constituents to have appropriate expectations about a potential BSA increase.
There's no promise to increase test scores or school student improvement. This is like a dire need of keeping it warm, water, and all the things that go into running a school.
Ortez said giving districts more money would help them implement requirements of the Alaska Reads Act this fall. The Senate Education Committee has proposed a $1,000 increase. That bill moved to the Senate Finance Committee earlier this month. The House Finance Committee will likely take up the bill again in mid-April. The 2023 legislative session is expected to end in mid-May.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
The federal council that voted to close a large part of Cook Inlet to commercial salmon fishing in 2020 is slated to choose a new management plan for the fishery next week after a federal court said it was illegal to shut it down last year. It's the latest in a long battle over management of the contentious fishery. But Homer fisherman Malcolm Milne, who represents Cook Inlet commercial fishermen on the North Pacific Fisheries Association, says many fishermen have moved on.
Most of the fishermen that I know that have fished in Upper Cook Inlet have left the fishery and gone to other fisheries. And you know, at this point, I think people are sort of just throwing up their hands and giving up on it.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council manages fishing in Alaska's federal waters. 3 years ago, responding to a lawsuit from the United Cook Inlet Drift Association, it voted to close a large swath of Upper Cook Inlet to commercial salmon fishing. The closure applied to Cook Inlet's federal waters, which start 3 miles offshore south of Kalgan Island. That area is where drift fishermen say they catch a majority of their fish. The closure was controversial, and the drift group sued once again to overturn the decision. The court sided with them in June, and the state reopened the fishery just as the 2022 season was starting up. But that was just a temporary fix. And last week, the Federal Fishing Council will consider 4 possible ways to move forward, though only 2 are legally possible. 1, the council could do nothing, but the court ruled that's not a viable option. Another would delegate management of the fishery to the feds, and another would still set up a system of federal management with some management delegated to the state, but the state has said it refuses to co-manage the fishery with the feds. That's why the council went with the final option back in 2020, which closed the fishery down completely. But that option, while listed in the council's packet, is no longer possible after the court's ruling. Milne says regardless of what the council chooses next week, the fishery is suffering from what he says is a management mess. Commercial fishermen are struggling to make a living in the inlet, and fewer processors are setting up shop in Kenai and Homer.
The best option for us would be to go back in time and erase everything that's happened in the last 12 years, but that's obviously impossible.
The council is also taking a look at regulations of salmon bycatch next week, including a potential hard cap on chum bycatch. Comments are due to the council Monday at 5 p.m. Council's meetings start next Thursday. Bans on commercial fishing in U.S. and international Arctic waters have been lauded as admirable preemptive actions that protect vulnerable resources before they are endangered by exploitation. But now the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is preparing for a time when the 14-year-old moratorium on commercial fishing in federal Arctic waters is lifted. The department is seeking $1 million in state general funds and another $2 million in federal funds to work on research to better understand those Arctic waters in the event that commercial fisheries are conducted there, Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang said on Wednesday. As fish stocks move north around the circumpolar north and fishing fleets from other countries follow them, Alaska should not be left out, Vincent Lang said during a panel discussion at the Arctic Encounter Symposium being held in Anchorage. Planning involves scientific research to identify biomasses and stocks north of the Bering Strait, he said. For now, there is no commercial fishing in U.S. federal waters north of the Bering Strait, though there are some small commercial harvests in state waters above the Arctic Circle. The moratorium on commercial fishing in U.S. Arctic waters was approved by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council in 2009. The town of Skagway is preparing for tourists to rush in. With increased docking capacity at the port and a longer season, the municipality is expecting a record number of visitors this year. KHNS's Alan DePermanil has more.
The tourism industry in Skagway is on track to recover from its pandemic slump. 1.2 million cruise ship passengers are expected to visit Skagway this year. This is almost double last year's numbers, and a 25% increase over the previous record year, 2019. René Limoges-Reeves is Vice President of Community Relations with the Cruise Lines International Association, or CLIA. She sees an increase in passenger numbers throughout the industry.
We know from our research that intent to cruise is higher than pre-pandemic levels. And that's both among people who have cruised in the past and people who have never cruised. Intent to cruise is through the roof. I think there's definitely a pent-up demand.
All these passengers will visit multiple ports, making the boom region-wide. Ketchikan is also expecting a record-setting year.
The Alaska market remains very, very strong. It's a bucket list destination. We know that. When you talk about cruising in the Caribbean, the ship is the destination. In Alaska, Alaska is the destination for all the reasons that we live there. The beautiful mountains, the wildlife, the glaciers. And I think people love to be immersed into small communities.
Skagway is preparing for the influx. Jamie Bricker is the town's tourism director. She loves seeing the town come to life.
It's so exciting. I just had coffee with a friend this morning, and there were a ton of new people walking into the coffee shop. Lots of hustle and bustle on Broadway. You see people packing in inventory into the retail shops and doors open, getting that fresh air circulating through each building, and everybody's moving around and preparing for the season around here.
The first cruise ship will arrive on April 18th, and the last one is scheduled for October 25th. This makes for a longer tourism season than in years past. Businesses will have to adapt to that timeline.
I think there's a varying degree of acceptance in terms of opening earlier and staying open later. There's also other factors that each business has to consider, like whether or not they have enough staff to cater to that early group of people or staff that will stay late into the season. And does it justify them staying open? I think that's a decision that each business will have to make for themselves. And it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds in Skagway.
Bricker is optimistic staffing needs will be met.
I have heard great things about the hiring for this year as opposed to the last several years in particular. Folks are staffed up. It's refreshing to hear that people are ready to come back to Skagway and ready to work for the summer.
Changes on the waterfront also contribute to the increased number of visitors.
There's a trend within the industry of having the larger ships that can accommodate more passengers. And we've got 4 berths that have been improved to accept some of these larger ships. Right now, we're maximizing that infrastructure in the best way possible to maximize the number of people that can come to Skagway. And so all of those things have led to that growth.
Renee Limoges-Reeves of the Cruise Lines Association sums up why so many visitors want to go to Skagway in the first place.
It's a gem in Alaska's jewelry box. We know that people go to Skagway, they see a beautiful little town that is extremely welcoming. We have wonderful excursion opportunities there. It's a historical location, and we're thrilled to go.
This year, part of the waterfront is returning under the municipality's control after a 55-year lease to a private company. Associated docking fees from now on are paid to the municipality. To mark the occasion, there will be a ceremony at Skagway's Shoreline Park on April 19th, the day after the first docking, at 5 p.m. Limoges-Reeves says this year, 60 cruise ships will dock in Haines, bringing in 75,000 visitors. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePremenil.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Claire Strempel and Katie Anastas in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Jeremy Shea and Chris Clint in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, and Alan DePermanel in Haines. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, you can email us news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. I'm Lori Townsend. Casey Grove will be back as your Alaska News Nightly host on Monday. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.